Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to the Boxing
Lab. Are you
again, boxing fans, you've entered the Boxing Lab. I am your host, as always, Ernest Gavion, joined, as always, by my co-host, Luis Sandoval.
Hello, everyone.
And Ryan Burton.
What's going on, guys?
Boxing Team's West Coast correspondent. Got a lot to talk about today. Joining us today, hopefully, time permitting, we have Abner Morris, who's a preparing for his bantamweight showdown with Joseph Ekpeko, the finale, something we didn't think would come to fruition, but now here it is. And also we have junior middleweight contender Vanes the Nightmare Mataruzin. He's going to come on, discuss the possibility of finally fighting for a title. I think it's exciting times for him. But you know what? Let's jump right into this. Let's get into this boxing discussion. Let's before Abner comes on, let's discuss this past weekend's fights. I'm sure everybody saw ESPN's Friday night fights. If you did, you saw basically two good fights. One ended really badly on a questionable decision by a referee, Vic Jakulich. Edison Miranda, Yordanis de Spain, I guess. I was calling him de Spagne, but I guess it's de Spain. This shaped up to be a pretty good fight. I personally thought this was getting back and forth. I thought the old horse in Miranda would bring out some of the best in the inexperienced Cuban. And for a while it looked like it was going to get back and forth. It was going to get pretty good, but after repeated low blows called by referee Vic Jakulich, he calls the fight off, which is stunning considering just the week before a questionable low blow, not called by Vic Jakulich, ended a fight. Ryan, you were there ringside. What were your observances of this fight?
Yeah, I agree with you. Personally, I thought the fight should not have been stopped. Although, I mean, if you break it down, I believe it was at the end of the first round, or I know it was at the end of the first round, Miranda hit Spain, with two shots way after the bell rang. They weren't real hard, but nevertheless, a foul's a foul, and he was warned.
Yeah.
And then he had another warning, I think it was in the second round, for a low blow. So, I mean, he kind of set himself up for it. But that being said, the fight was just starting to get good. The low blow that ended the fight didn't seem that bad at all. So I don't know why, like we've seen a lot of times when a guy is at the point where he can be disqualified, why they didn't just, put your hands up, keep them up. Yeah. Let it go. Then if it happens again, then you stop it.
Well, what's funny about that is that the very first low blow, the one that kind of made the Spain cringe, I'm sure we're all being Teddy Atlas on here and mispronouncing names. but the first low blow wasn't even a low blow in my eyes. He just barely tapped him, and next thing De Spain goes into this Oscar-winning performance of it actually affecting him. And, of course, the ref is going to see that and call it accordingly. But it just seems maybe Jakulich was overcompensating for, the questionable way that the Khan Judah fight ended. I don't know. But it was a rotten way to see a fight that was picking up steam go out. And Luis, did you happen to watch the fight live? What were you thinking when it went down?
I thought Jakulich pretty much stole the show because I thought he ruined the fight. I think the first incident where he hit him after the bell, that I understood. If you wanted to take a point away for him after the bell, that's fine. Exactly. He pulled on the punch. It landed on the belt line. Despaño was acting more than he was hurt. And the problem that I had was he kind of put himself in a corner because he took a point right away, and then on the next low blow, personally, I think he just should have given him a warning. He didn't give him a warning. He took another point away, and at that point, I mean, you're really at the point where you're going to have to disqualify this guy. I think he should have given him warnings. I mean, you know, in the heat of the battle, you know, punches are going to go low, your head's going to get pulled down, or whatever the cause may be. But I think you need to give the guy a warning, give him a chance to correct a mistake and make him be conscious of what he's doing instead of disqualifying him on you know, what I think it was a third low blow. And like you said, Ernie, the fight was just heating up. It was getting interesting. And, you know, I think Vic Draculich pretty much, you know, made a terrible decision.
Yeah, I mean, so now the question must be asked. I mean, we saw what he did the week prior. Is this overcompensation for what was regarded as borderline, maybe low, maybe not? It seems to me like he tried to make up for maybe a quote-unquote missed call.
Well, the funny part about that is for the Zab Judah fight, I don't even think he saw the punch. I mean, I think he made the right call, but he didn't really see it.
Yeah.
And ironically, this week, he was in a perfect position to see these punches, and then he made, you know, terrible calls. So I think it's just ironic that he would do that. But if he overcompensating, you know, maybe. At the end of the day, I just chalked it up to bad officiating.
You know, another thing we're not looking at is, you know, Miranda has a reputation as a dirty fighter.
Exactly.
That probably played into this as well.
Yeah, you know what? He's been known to give a low blow or two. He's been known to be a little foul prone. You know, I think with that reputation, it didn't assist him in any way. But it's just a shame to see a fight that was heating up go that measure. The main event of the Friday night fights was, I think, to me, a crossroads fight, even though between the both of them, they only had two losses combined. Lamont Peterson versus Victor Kyle. It was a nice back-and-forth affair, but I think overall you saw the class of the different the class differences between the two fighters, essentially. Peterson's a well-schooled fighter. Barry Hunter has trained him his whole career. Has him very disciplined, very, very technique-savvy. And I think that bored out and played out, and I think it overcame Kyle's skill set, which is he's very fast-handed, kind of plays it loose, kind of plays it very informal. We see the technician overcome the kind of like the freestyle fighter. And it was a good back and forth affair. And you know, Peterson wins in dramatic 12th round knockout fashion. And now I guess maybe he becomes a player once again at 140. He's rumored to be he is the mandatory for Amir Khan's, IBF belt. Do you see, first off, both of you guys, I'm going to turn it back to you guys. What do you think? What did you think of the Kyle fight? And two, what do you think his chances are against a proposed Amir Khan fight?
You know, first of all, I thought the fight was actually pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I think both guys really understood what was at stake here. It was an IBF eliminator, perfect chance to put themselves back in the mix. And I think both guys really gave it their all. It was a lot of back and forth, a lot of give and take. And I think halfway through the fight, I had it, you know, I think it was the fight was up for grabs still, and then I think Peterson really took over in the second half. Pretty much what he was the better fighter, took over the fight a little bit. And, you know, I was a little surprised that Kyle didn't beat the count in the 12th round. It looked like he was on a knee. You expecting him to get up. I think that's a good feather in Peterson's cap. I'm sure he's happy about getting the stoppage. And as far as getting Amir Khan, you know, I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, you know, they just announced that Morales is going to fight Matisse. We'll talk about that later on. And Amir is already saying he'd like to fight Morales if he wins. So I think we're going to have to wait for a lot of stuff to develop to see if that fight will even take place. And, you know, Amir's looking at one last fight at 140. I don't know if he wants it to be against Peterson. He might want a big name like Morales. So, you know, I think we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, I agree with you, Lewis. I mean, if you look at the fight, I mean, Lamont Peterson, it was a great win for him, but looking at him with Victor Kyle, they didn't look like they were on Amir Khan's level. They looked kind of like they were a step down, in my opinion. It was, like you said, a pretty even fight going into the last couple rounds where, to me, it looked like Kyle was running out of gas. I mean, when he got dropped, he looked like he was hurt, but he looked more like he was just gassed. I think he was just out of energy. I think all the body shots that Peterson hit him with really affected him, and I was surprised, too, that he didn't get up. But I guess it depends on what Khan's team wants. If they want just to do a mandatory that's not due for a belt that they're going to give up, you know, after the next fight anyways, then maybe they'll fight him. But I agree with you. I think the Morales fight if he beats Matisse, which is not, you know, a given at any means at all. That's a way bigger money fight. So I would think that that or the winner between Maidana or and Guerrero is probably the way he'll end up going.
Well, I mean, it was nice to see him get back on the board again. I think after the loss and the draw where he had to come from behind against Victor Ortiz, I think this was much needed. And you know, hopefully it does propel him into something, you know, more significant, more and more along the elite level. Can you see a Peterson being a champ? I'm not sure. You know, someone made the comment to me that they think Peterson was a small 140-pound fighter, and I don't see that. I think he's pretty average. I don't think he's, you know, tiny by any stretch, but he's not, you know, he's not a giant. He's not like Victor Ortiz, you know, towering over the division. Can you see maybe him grabbing a title out there? I mean, it's a rather deep division. You know, he's got a skill set and a technique that is, you know, very good. But does he have enough to grab a belt in such a deep division?
You know, I think he can, and the only reason I think he can is because a lot of the top guys are either vacating or leaving the division. I think the cream's going to rise to the top. You see a lot of other guys like Peterson who haven't really been on that top level that are still there, you know, even a Mike Alvarado kind of fighter. So I think eventually once those, you know, guys at the top are out, it's going to leave these other guys there fighting for the title. So, will he get a title? You know, I think he has a good chance. I think, you know, he gets the right opponent, he could be good. And like you, Ernie, the thing that I see about Peterson, he likes fighting on the inside a lot. He likes going a lot to the body. And I think he exposes himself a lot sometimes, even during the fight against Kyle. You know, he goes into kind of like a winky right kind of shell. But some of those punches still get through. So I think he's always going to be in those type of fights. I mean, even his big fights against Ortiz and Bradley, he's had to come back to get back into the fight. But I like Peterson. I think if the division clears up a little bit, I think he has a good chance.
He's a gritty guy. I'll say that. To come back and be somewhat competitive against Tim Bradley after him dropping him early and building up a huge lead, I think shows some grit. Same thing with the Ortiz fight. Drops him twice. Pretty much had him dead to right. And he climbed back into it. Granted, I think a lot of it had to do with Ortiz is kind of backing off. But it takes two to tangle, and Peterson did make a nice little comeback. Speaking of the junior welterweight division, we saw a much maligned and a much tormented career of Mike Alvarado get another kickstart again. Solid, basically workmanlike performance against Gabriel Martinez. I remember at one point when Top Rank had both Victor Ortiz and Mike Alvarado, they were pushing them along the same level as both guys, and that's how high Top Rank had thought of them. And to me, you know, I think, you know, this has got to be his last shot. This has got to be his run at it. I know he's had some legal issues that keep pestering him, and I think in a lot of ways he, you know, he's kind of his own worst enemy with this. But he's kind of sworn to make all the right moves. He actually moved his camp out to the Los Angeles area, more specifically Maywood, the Maywood gym, where he had been training there for this fight, and he liked it. And I think he's going to repeat this performance. I think he's realized that he's got to move his camp out of his hometown. Something that we've seen before. Ryan, what did you think of the fight? I don't know if you saw it. I can give a take. I thought it was very workmanlike. I thought he drops, you know, Martinez early. Martinez is, you know, he's scrappy and he's good enough, but, you know, we saw what Melogen did to him. So I'm not sure if I came away with this as impressed or not. More just, yeah, it wasn't bad. Or maybe Lewis. Lewis, did you see the fight?
Yeah, I saw it. You know, I had the same feeling as you, Ernie. I know a lot of people have been saying it was a dominant performance. I don't think it was a dominant performance.
Yeah.
I don't think he lost the fight. I think he clearly won the fight, but I think, you know, Martinez came to fight. He gave him some trouble. He was doing really good in spots. I thought he was landing that straight right really easily on Alvarado, which, you know, I didn't like too much. But, you know, like you said, Alvarado has a high work rate. He likes to walk his opponent down. And while it wasn't an impressive win, I think he benefits from going to 10 rounds. You know, he gets to test out his conditioning, gauge where he's at. And while it wasn't a big, impressive win, I think, you know, Martinez is probably hard to look against anyway. And I think he did what he had to do. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to benefit him because he got the rounds in. And it was nice seeing him, you know, fight in Denver. I mean, I like seeing, you know, guys have a local following.
4,000 people.
Yeah,
that's quite a following. You know, it's along the lines of what Bam Bam Brandon Rios did for his fight against Antion. And a lot of people were talking about, you know, him drawing. So, I mean, it's favorable to what some of the level fighters that he's currently at right now is pulling. So it's encouraging to see that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Go, Ryan.
Okay, speaking of Bam Bam Rios, how sick would a fight be between Alvarado and Rios?
You know, that might end up happening if Brandon moves up and wants to, you know, vie for a title. Because I know that they're trying to, you know, boost Alvarado into a title shot. I'm not sure he's quite ready for that level yet. I honestly think with Alvarado, I think his experience is going to be his worst, you know, his worst enemy. If you look down the docket of his fight resume, it's littered with guys who he's made, you know, tailor made for him to beat and beat convincingly. It hasn't been a real litmus test for him. You know, it's not the kind of run that you see a guy like, I don't know, I guess we'll throw Brandon Rios out there. He went from Tehran to Peterson to Acosta to Antion. That's not a bad little run. If Alvarado catapults from the Martinez fight into a next level, maybe a top 10 contender type, and then goes to the title, then I think he might have some legs to make a run. How do you think he compares, Ryan, with the guys up at the 140-pound division? It's a pretty stacked division.
Yeah, but like Lewis said, a lot of the guys are leaving. I mean, if we just take a look at Tim Bradley just being stripped of the WBC belt or made a champion in recess.
Whoa, wait, yeah. He wasn't stripped. Let's make that clear. Suleiman had said that.
Right, well, yeah, but, you know, who knows how long he's going to be out of the ring. He's being sued by Gary Shaw. He'll probably countersue. I wouldn't expect to see him in the ring for 6 months. And in that amount of time, the WBO may take away their belt. Khan's moving on in a few more months, which will free up the IBF and the WBA belt. So you're going to have all these belts that are open, and I think that Alvarado's team's trying to work on the IBF belt. And if you have Khan out of the division, Devin Alexander said he's moving up. Paulie Malignaggi already moved up. You may all these guys that were either, you know, mid-level contenders up to champions or former champions, then you're left with Eric Morales, Marcos Maidana, Lucas Matisse, and some of those guys might move up too. So I could see Alvarado getting a title shot. We know Top Rank likes to pit their fighters together, so I could see, you know, maybe in a year to year and a half, if Rios doesn't fight a Pacquiao, a fight like that could happen.
Fair enough. Lewis, do you see a champion in Alvarado? I'm personally, I think he can grab a belt. Can he hold it? I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
I'm obsessed with that one.
I'm like you, and like Ryan said again, you know, the good thing is, you know, the top names are moving up, so belts are going to open up, and you got a lot of young guys there. I mean, you even have, like, Jesse Vargas, Danny Garcia, you know, guys like that down there that are eventually going to start moving up and trying to fight for those titles. So I think, you know, a year ago maybe I would have said no because the division was extremely stacked. I think now we're seeing some clearance. I think whether he gets a title or not, he's going to get that chance sooner or later. And like you said, I think the time is now. I mean, I really don't know if he needs any more fights. Maybe just to get back in the groove of things, but I expect him to see him in with a top 10 140-pounder pretty soon and see if he's ready. You know, you'll never know you're ready unless you take the chance, and I think his time has come.
Cool. I'm not sold yet. I think, you know, it's kind of like what, I guess what we'll also discuss later on in this episode. It's kind of like what I see with Kelly Pavlik. You know, he says all the right things, but you know, can he make that transition? Can he make that commitment? Can he make that real strong career move into taking this as a serious business? And while this is a great start, we also thought that he had a great start last year and the year before that. And you know, these types of guys, you got to always keep kind of a hesitant optimism about them. And I hope so. I mean, from what I've heard, the kid's a good guy. He gets into knuckleheaded business and gets in trouble. Does he have the talent to sustain this level of fighting? You know, the best way I described it to someone is he's good. He's good at pretty much everything. Defensively, he's okay. Power's good. You know, it, but there's nothing that really strikes me as over the top. This guy is a can't miss. I mean, you know, you look at other guys that were out, you know, within top rank as well, like Mikey Garcia. You see him, he's accurate. He's offensively, he's very technical. You know, defensively, he watches his P's and Q's. And you see something special in a guy like that. Or a Gamboa, you see the flash and the brilliance at times. Mike is just very workmanlike. And sometimes workmanlike champions happen over the course of a career. I mean, it does happen. But just something to be excited about, I think jury's still out. Ryan, do you see that, or do you see something different?
Yeah, I mean, until we see him, like you said, with a top 10, top 15 guy, we can't really say. I mean, we saw him with, was it Ray North, and then North was sick, or he said he had 15. So we didn't even get to see him, you know, really pushed in that fight, which I thought would have showed us something. So that's kind of, he's kind of an incomplete, I guess is the only way you can say it, until he gets a guy, you know, I'm trying to think of who would be the perfect opponent, either someone moving up from 135 to 140 just to test him, you know, even like a Urbano Antillon if he decided to move up, or someone like that. I mean, well, Humberto Soto moved up too. I mean, I don't think they would make that fight, but that would be another one that would be interesting.
Maybe a Hank Lundy? You know,
yeah, we'd see if he could deal with speed.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that the prospects slash contenders go through. They need to see, to me, they need to see different looks. And I think he's been fed one type of opponent throughout his career, and he's been made to look, you know, really, you know, very good at this. And, you know, hopefully he gets this back on track, and we can get a real good assessment of what Mike Alvarado's career is going to look like. Also on that card was one-time can't-miss prospect Robert Marroquin in his first fight since losing to Francisco Leal on Top Rank Live against Jose Barranza. And, you know, it was the typical comeback. You're supposed to win. At times you look dominant performance. But the same things that I saw, not even just in the Leal fight, but the fight beforehand when he was fighting on the non-TV portion of the Reels Acosta fight, was enough to make me think that this kid, if without him changing something within his team, is plateaued. He's very stiff. He throws really picture-perfect punches, but like, you know, my friend Steve Kim says, a lot of times these guys, they punch to a target because they've been taught so much mitt work. It's become their main focus, and rather than punching through a target, which is what the heavy bag teaches, and it seems like Marroquin is following suit with that. You look at him, and he's punching to targets, and he's you know, taking some target practice. And it looks, aesthetically, it looks beautiful. But long-term impact, you got to wonder when someone like, I'll go back to it, Leal, when they're willing to take a shot to land their harder punches, you got to kind of wonder whether or not this is as good as Marroquin gets. And I think, you know, I've said it before, I think if Leal fought him again in a rematch, he beats him. You know, and I'm just not sure if this can't miss prospect has actually indeed missed. Ryan or Lewis, tell me what you thought about Marroquin's performance.
Yeah, you know, like you said, it was a comeback fight. You know, he was put in there with a guy he's supposed to beat, and you know, he didn't look particularly impressive. I think he put him down twice. He put him down with a nice uppercut, I think, in the sixth round. You know, one thing that did strike to me, though, was I think in the seventh round, who was he fighting? Barranza?
Yeah, Barranza.
Hit him with a nice, I think, three-punch combination. It actually started a big mouth under his eye. And,
yep.
You know, I was a little like, okay, wow, like, you didn't expect him to get hit like that. And had the fight been a 10-round fight, I would have been a little interested to see how he dealt with that. I think he had a similar kind of bump in the Leal fight.
Yeah, and in the fight beforehand, I forgot who his opponent was, but it was on the non-TV portion. He swelled up in that fight as well. It makes you wonder whether or not he's boiling himself down in weight.
Exactly.
To make this weight, because when it's kind of an indication of someone who has trouble making weight is when they swell up very easily.
Yeah, and you know, and then like you, I don't know. I'm not too sold on him right now. I think normally when you have a prospect like this and you lose a fight, like the Leal fight, you know, you have to go back to the drawing board and see what's going wrong. And sometimes it's better for them to lose these fights early on. You correct it early on, and it doesn't cost you a title fight or anything like that. But, I don't know. like you, I think they need to do a little bit better than that. And, you know, at this point, I didn't walk away from that fight particularly impressed, especially the way, you know, he finished that fight, again, getting caught. And, you know, like I said, I wish the fight would have been an extra two rounds, see how he reacted. You know, most of the time you want to see these guys, how they react in those situations, especially when they've been in them before. But like you said, Camus prospect, you know, right now I'm not too sure about him right now.
Yeah, I agree. Wrapping up the weekend's fights, WBA lightweight champion, the mysterious Kaiser Soze. Oh, I mean, Beboot Shumanov. wins in, I guess, is impressive fashion. I got to be honest, I didn't see the fight. I don't want to pull a Dan Raphael and comment on a fight. I didn't see it once again. But I'll leave it to Ryan, who actually did see the fight. somewhat, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, we had two fights here in Vegas. I decided to go to the Cosmo, way nicer venue, and I DVR'd.
Way nicer fights, too. Let's
yep. And I DVR'd the fights, and I saw, I think it was 7 or 8 rounds, and honestly, I fell asleep. I DVR'd it. When I got home, I was downloading some interviews. But no, I mean, from what I saw, Shumanov, we do have to give him some credit. From, like I said, from the Campillo fight, where he would, like, bend his knees to throw every punch and grunt. And yeah. It looked like it was more like karate instead of boxing.
Oh, man. I can just see this. The boxing lab. Beboot Shumanov's official radio show. we are not fans of this guy, I take it.
So, but you know, I'll give credit where credit's due.
Yeah,
did do
course.
A lot better the last couple of fights. And Danny Santiago, I mean, he moved around, but Shumanov was pretty accurate. He was able to land punches on him for most of the fight that I saw. He took a few shots. But to me, he's the weakest link at the weight class. Jean Pascal was in town. He was at the Cosmopolitan with cruiserweight contender BJ Flores. They were hanging out. And they took off right after the Peterson-Caio fight, took off down the strip to the South Point to catch the Shumanov fight.
And maybe a little scouting report on there. Maybe he go grabs a WBA title, huh?
He jumped in the ring afterwards and called him out. And Beboot, to his credit, said he'll fight him, but he said there's no way in hell he was going to Canada and he wants to fight him here in Vegas or in...
In front of 845 fans?
That, or he said go to, is it Kazakhstan, his country, or Kazakhstan, if I'm saying it right?
Oh, Lord.
For Borat Trump.
he said he had 30,000 fans there. I think it was for the Joppy fight, I think he was saying. And he said he can get 50 if he fights Pascal, so it's... Basically, who wants to go to whose backyard? And Pascal's got the power in his fist. Maybe he would go there if the payday's big enough, figuring he'll knock him out.
Yeah, I think, you know, like you, Ryan, I mean, I have to give him credit. I mean, you know, he was in there, and he actually looked, you know, I hate to say it, he actually looked okay. He didn't look bad. You know, like you said, definitely a step up. And, you know, I think the way he, I think in the 7th round, I think Santiago tried to test him a little bit and try to unload on him and try to egg them on. And, you know, Shumanov was, you know, they said, let's go. And then they exchanged. And I think when he stopped them, Shumanov actually landed a really, really nice combination that I think Santiago was expecting to block. And they caught him and hurt him, put him on the ropes. It was a good stoppage for Shumanov. But like you said, Ryan, he's the weakest link in the division. I think, you know, Pascal definitely sees an easy title right there. You know, I hope they fight. I mean, I'd like to see him mix it up with the other guys there. I mean, even a Sabor's Cloud fight, I doubt they take it.
They would do it. I mean, I've talked to Don King about that fight, and I've talked to Forrest Cloud. They love the fight. The question is, they want that for a main event fight. They don't want to be a...
Hell, man, if I was the Forrest Cloud, I'd go after that fight. I'd go after that fight in a heartbeat.
Exactly. I don't know if Shumanov will be in a hurry. I mean, now that he said he is, I mean, I'd like to see that fight. You know, I just want to see him mix it up with these guys. I mean, when you look at him, I mean, you don't, when you see him fight, you don't think you're looking at a world champion. You know,
no.
I think that's a huge problem, I think, you know, and... You know, sooner or later, somebody's going to come and take his belt, and I think these guys are going to start lining up and trying to do it.
Yeah, I honestly, I can't see him. Man, I really can't see him taking on a Tavoris Cloud. Pascal, I can see it. I don't think Pascal is the same type of beast that Cloud is. I think he's a different fighter, so I think... You know, Beboot may see this as a safer, easier way to retain his title. But even then, I mean, if you look at Beboot, do you see a guy, one, who's a champion, and two, can beat the guys at the upper level. I mean, is he even an upper level guy at 175 pounds?
Nah, not at all. Not in my opinion. I mean, even the way he won the belt wasn't in convincing fashion. You know, you know, he's lucky to have the belt. Like I said, when I see him fight, I don't feel like I'm watching a world champion. And, you know, I think for the most part, you know, guys like him usually fight lower level competition. They try to hang on to the belt as long as they can. Yeah. And then they finally cash out with a big fight. You know, so if he were to take a Pascal or a Cloud fight or anybody at 175 that's actually worth a damn, I'd be pretty surprised, because I feel like they're probably going to shelter this guy for a little bit, have him hang on to the title, maybe work on some stuff, and then eventually put him in a big fight. But I'd be surprised if he takes a big fight after this.
Yeah, you could probably name 10 guys in the light heavyweight division ahead of him. I mean, Glenn Johnson knocks him out, I think.
I agree.
And murders him.
Yeah. You guys are tuned into the Boxing Lab. If you guys want to call in, the number to call in is 347-215-7598. Let me see if we can patch someone in. Let's see. Let's take a gander here. Area code 973. Are you on?
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. You're on the Boxing Lab, my friend. What's your name?
It's Ness GTO. I usually follow Leave It in the Ring on Twitter, and I always tune in to the other shows that you guys have. And, you know, I heard that you guys had a Tuesday night show with some different hosts, so I was just tuning in. I caught it pretty late. I'm just getting on, so I was only really hearing about the lightweight division. But
I'm pretty much in accordance with you guys. What I'll do is I'll come back to you. Right now, we do have our guest on. So let me come back to you and get on. Hold on 1 second, okay?
Okay.
Thanks, buddy. Hello?
Hello?
Is this Abner or no?
No, it isn't.
Okay, hold on 1 sec. Thanks. One of these two. Because there's two, ironically, there's 2562 numbers when they... So hold on 1 sec. Let me grab this one. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Abner?
Yeah, this is Abner.
Abner, you're on with the Boxing Lab. This is Ernie. You're joined by Lewis and Ryan. Welcome to the show, champ. It's a pleasure to have you on. And what you got to say for yourself?
Oh, nothing. Just, you know, thank you for the invite. Great to be on, and any questions, I'm glad to answer.
Okay, well, let's start it off. Ryan, you know what? I'll start it off with you. Talk to the champ. See what he has to say. Ryan, did we lose you?
No, I'm here. Sorry about that. I had it on mute. Abner, first question. Just talk about your run of fights here lately. You go from Yanni Perez to Victor Chinyan, right on to Joseph Abeko. That's a pretty tough stretch there. How do you prepare mentally for such grueling fights, three back in a row, back to back to back?
Just mentally, what can I say? I mean, it's great. I'm happy to be fighting such great fighters, elite fighters at their prime. And I'm happy. I mean, I would definitely like to continue with this streak, you know, and fighting legit, you know, fighters. That's what I want to be recognized as. A fighter who fought, you know, the very best out there. And, you know, I feel great, you know, mentally and physically. I'm young, and I'm ready to do this.
Hey, Abner, this is Luis Sandoval. The question I have for you is, you know, you're fighting in this tournament coming up against Abeko. You know, that fight has so much at stake. I mean, you get a world title, you become the tournament winner, and probably the most important thing is, you know, most people think that the winner of this fight is going to fight Nonito Donaire. How do you, I mean, do you think about that stuff, or do you try to keep it out of your mind? How do you deal with all that talk going around heading into a big fight like this?
Yeah, you know what, I tried not to think about it because I do have a great fighter in front of me, Abeko. It's a tough fight, which is not won yet, you know. I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, either of us, you know, the winner fighting Nonito or any, you know, top 10 fighter out there because, you know, I am blessed to be at a weight division right now where most of the fighters are, you know, great fighters. You know, we have jam-packed great fighters. So, I mean, there is a lot of talk about Nonito, but I try not to think about it right now. Let's get things done first, August 13th. And if we take care of business and we do it, you know, in a great great form, we were really looking forward to that fight. Why not?
Okay. And then the other question is, you know, of course, you're fighting at Beko. You know, we've seen him fight different ways. You know, with Perez, he kind of stood in there and went to war with him. And then we see him in the rematch. He uses movement, his angles. What kind of fight are you expecting from him? You know, I know you probably don't know what to expect, but how are you preparing and how do you plan on dealing with his different styles?
You know what? You're right. You said it. I don't know what to expect. It's hard to expect something a style from Beko because he's shown that he could do it all. You know, he could box, he could brawl. So I really don't know what game he has. I'm sure he's thinking the same way about me, like he doesn't know what I'm going to bring in. So it's, like I said, it's just a matter of figuring each other out, you know, in the ring. Whoever figures out who first, I think it's going to be, you know, determining the winner.
Abner, this is Ryan again. And let's talk about Beko's chin for a minute. This guy seems to be able to just take punch after punch. How do you prepare for that knowing he's probably going to take a punch or two to try to get inside and land a couple?
You know what? Yeah, you're right. He takes a lot of punches, but that's the thing. He takes a lot of punches. So we're going to try to work on that, you know, just land and work his body and, you know, just take it from there. I know he's a guy who takes a lot of punches, who could take a great punch. But then again, we were only going 12 rounds. So I mean, if it goes the distance, we're ready for it.
And not only is this, you know, for the Bantamweight tournament, this is also for Beko's IBF Bantamweight title. What will it mean to you to win, you know, your first world championship?
It's a lot. I mean, both of them are really important to me right now. winning the Showtime tournament and also winning the IBF title because, I mean, IBF title is a world title, you know, something every fighter dreams of, you know, becoming a world champion. So that's a lot for me, for my family. And winning the Showtime tournament too, because I mean, it's a tournament where we fought nothing but the best. A tournament that has given me a lot, you know, Showtime, which I thank to showcase my boxing. And you know, I'm really looking forward to this tournament because there's so much in, you know, to win and so much to look forward after this fight.
And you know, Luis mentioned a possible fight with Nonito Donaire. But long-term, have you thought, is there a plan, you know, maybe 2, 3, 4 fights down the road to move up to 122 and test the waters at the Super Bantamweight division?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, if you look at my record, I started fighting at Super Bantamweight. I believe my first 7, 8 fights were at Super Bantamweight. So I have no problem going up on, you know, moving up on weight. But like you said, you know, let's look ahead. I mean, let's wait until this fight is over and then, you know, see what's next, what the next move we can make.
Abner, hey, it's Ernie. Describe to us the emotions you went through. I know you took it really well. I was amazed at how composed you were when on the eve of the fight, I mean, literally days before you were to go into the big time and make a splash, and the fight was canceled. And I know you, I've known you for years. You've had a lot of stops and starts with your career. You had an appendix and the retina, and then now this with Zach Beko's injury. You had to have been at least a little bit frustrated. Even though you didn't show it, you had to have been a little frustrated, a little angry, and a little disappointed.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, I'm only human, you know. I'm young. Honestly, at the time when they told me the fight was going to be canceled, there was frustration in me. I felt disappointed because all the work we did, the whole camp, you know, I could see it in their face too. We were so ready, so looking forward to this. But then again, you know, it's life. Things happened. Looking at the human side of that, you know, looking at Azbeko, the way he was, you know, his face, the way he was limping, it, you know, it only made me think that, you know, that could have been me. So, I mean, things happen, you know, we had to move on, and, I mean, things happen for a reason.
As you know, I know the son of your manager, Frankie Espinoza, a good friend of mine. He's been saying that you look incredible in the gym. He's been saying that that this has been probably the strongest and more most powerful that you've looked. Is it going to translate into what we see in the ring with you on the 13th? Are we going to see a dominant performance by you? And granted, you know, it's only as good as the opponent in front of you. But the way you've been going in this camp, do you predict not only just a win, but a dominating performance over Azbeko?
I hope so. But I just don't want to put that pressure in me, you know, think that, force myself or think to myself that, okay, I got to perform greatly. I don't want to put that pressure on me. I just been working really hard in the gym, and I know everything's going to come out in the fight. Everything that we're doing in the gym is going to come out that day, August 13th. We're going to showcase a great fighting, great skills that we've been working on. I know I'm a brawler. I can brawl. I can stand in there and trade punches, but I think it's time to show the people what skills Abner Mattis has. So definitely we're looking forward to making a statement and looking good, you know, not only winning, because winning is a great thing. We want to win. We want to win this world title. But the way you perform is, you know, the best thing. So we are going to try to perform really good.
And Abner, it's Lewis again. You know, this tournament's only been one fight so far. But how do you? What's been the best part about the tournament for you so far, and what's been the worst?
I'm sorry, what was the question again?
You know, the tournament's only been about a fight. So, you know, being on this level, being on this platform, so far, what has been the best part of the tournament for you, and what has been the worst?
Well, there's no worst. I can honestly say the good thing about this tournament has been everything. Just the Showtime being able to showcase my style, me as a person, people recognize me now, people know about me. So it's been great. There's just that thing. I mean, thank God we won, you know, the fight against Arcanian, and there's nothing bad I can say about this tournament.
Okay, and then speaking of Arcanian, I'm sure if you were to win this tournament, he'll continue calling you out. He still wants his rematch. Is that a fight you'd be interested in, or would you be interested in maybe taking on a bigger fight with Bonito?
You know what? I leave that to my promoters, my manager. But like I told you, I'm not trying to look that ahead yet. I have a champion in front of me. I gotta take care of that. Just to answer your question, I wouldn't mind fighting Darkinian again. He's a great fighter. He's a fighter that you continue fighting, and he's always gonna give you a great fight. He's a champion, and if the fastest fight the fans want to see, we'll definitely try to work on that too.
Well, Abner, I think the time is now for you. I see you as a coming out party. I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to lie. Initially, on the April 23rd card, I did predict Azbeko would beat you. But during the span of time for me, what I've seen out of you and what I've seen and what I've heard from Frank and Frankie is that there's a maturation process with you, and hopefully this translates into a stellar performance next week, next Saturday at the Hard Rock Casino and live on Showtime. I want to thank you, Abner, for joining us. It's always a pleasure, and when you come away victorious, we'd love to have you back on.
Well, I'll be happy to be back on. Thank you so much for this exposure. Appreciate you guys, and we'll give you guys a great show and something to talk about. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and then we can, you know what, when you come back, and we can say, and the new.
And new.
All right, Abner, take care, and get some rest, and hopefully either we'll be there live or we'll be watching you on Showtime.
Thank you. I hope I get some rest. Right now I'm actually driving to the park to get my run. So,
you know what?
I'll get my rest after.
Take care, Abner.
Thanks, Abner.
All right, you guys have a good one.
You
love next week.
good kid. I always come away so impressed with this kid. He's a very humble kid. He's a very down-to-earth guy. And you know, it's hard to root against guys like him.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's true, Ernie. Every time I interview, every time I see him, the guy's always very accommodating. He'll give interviews. He's smiling. He's a real humble kid. I think he's really enjoying this experience. You know, I think he wants to get to his level, and trying to get this world title, I think, is so, so important to him. And you can really tell when you talk to him.
Yeah, I wonder if he has a style that beats it. I mean, Echo's slippery. We always thought, I hearken back to the Yanni Perez rematch, where everybody thought it was going to be the first fight redone. And Echo showed a side of him that had Perez in fits. And I think it really kind of started almost the demise of Yanni Perez. So I wonder, you know, what Echo's going to throw at him. But I really do think that this is Mars' time to shine. And if he's ever going to get to that next level where the fans get behind him, because they're almost that, you could see it, they're almost like wanting to get behind him. They're almost like wanting to just enjoy another Mexican-American star, but they're not quite sure whether he's going to go over the top. And I think if he has a stellar performance August 13th, I can totally see him, you know, escalating his star power up to the next level.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, man. It just feels like I asked him, it just feels so much at stake on this fight.
Yep.
The tournament, the world title, you know, getting the Nonito fight. And like you said now, you know, crossing over to where the fans are going to back him up. You know, it's so much invested in this fight. And, you know, it's a lot of pressure. But, you know, I think the good thing about him, he's been in the big fights before. And, you know, I think at Beko, honestly, I think he learned from the first Perez fight. You know, I think he'll try to use his angles. I think he'll try to use his movement against Abner. So, you know, if I was Abner, I prepare for that style as well. Because if it's a war, I think Abner has a good chance. If a Beko fights like he did in the Perez fight, it could be a long night.
Yeah, I agree. You know what? Let's take a caller right now while we're waiting in between guests. Caller 562. Let me see if I can connect you. Caller 562.
I'm not sure if that would be me. Is that me?
Yeah, you're on. You're welcome to the Boxing Lab. I actually talked to you initially. I thought you were Abner because you were calling from the same area code. But welcome
That's
to the
right.
Boxing Lab. What you got to say? What do you think of Abner's call?
You know, like you guys, man, I'm always impressed with this kid because he's so young and he seems so poised and, you know, always very respectful of the fans, of the media and the sport, and that's very commendable. And, I mean, you tack on the star power and just his overall boxing ability, man, he's going to do really good, and I'm really rooting for him against Ed Beko, and then a fight against, somebody like rematch with Archinian, or maybe even up against Nonito Donaire. That'll be big.
Oh, man, a matchup between him and The Flash, I think, needs to marinate, but I really can see that being a big fight for either Vegas or Los Angeles. I think that's a natural match made out of it's just a natural progression. It's got to happen. So hopefully these two guys, you know, keep on their winning path, and so that way we can actually enjoy this fight. Did you have a comment or a question with it for any of us?
You know what? Actually, I'm waiting for Bonas. I'd like to, just ask Bonas what his opinion is about the elite at 154 pounds right now. I mean, just based on the different commissions. I'd like to get his take, of course, on Pedro Angulo. I'd like to get his take on Canelo Alvarez.
You know what?
Take
so would
on
I. So would I. I mean, this guy, honestly, you know, because I don't know. I mean, you follow the sport. You know, he's been calling out everybody from Cotto.
From Shane Mosley before the Pacquiao fight, you know?
I mean, I'm afraid he's going to start calling out guys like Terry Norris and Maurice Blanc pretty soon.
Exactly, I followed Albanis' career, and he has the ability. He's a great boxer, you know. I mean, his credentials speak for themselves, you know. I mean, a former Olympian, you know.
Yeah.
the kid's undefeated, you know, and he's fought some tough guys, man. I mean, I feel bad for the kid because he hasn't gotten the opportunities that the guys like and the exposure like the guys like Canelo and Chavez Jr. and them have had. But he's up there, you know. I mean, I think he's for the Armenian community. I think he's even better than Darchinian. You know, I mean, I think his credentials speak even louder than that. It's just, either his management team or his promoters, they haven't really done a good job with the kid.
In Southern California, he definitely, I think, connects more simply because he's around here. He lives in Glendale, and you always see him on the boxing scene. He's always at a lot of the Art of War cards, the Karin Hartunian cards. So I think he does connect with the community out here a lot more than, say, a Vic who comes from Australia, spends a couple weeks here, and then goes back. So, you know, I think, you know, for the Armenian community as a whole, I really do think that they would get behind this guy, and if he keeps progressing the way he does, you can have a bona fide star that can fill a Home Depot, that can, you know, maybe even, you know, headline a Staples if the right matchup comes along. So, hey, I just wanted to thank you for call. I'm going to jump on and see if I can grab someone else, but stay on, please, and when Vonis comes on, we will ask him all those questions, my friend.
Excellent. Thank you. My name is Oliver, by the way, from East L.A.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Let's grab another one. Let's see. Hello, 973.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good. You know what? Sorry I had to put you back on hold, but, you know, Abner called in at the same time you did. So, hey, what's your thoughts, man? Share your boxing thoughts with us.
I don't know. I really like Abner, like the last caller was saying, and I am one of those guys that's looking to get behind him. I just don't see him being ready at this point for an Unito de Nair.
But will he ever be ready for? But do you think he would ever be ready for Unito?
I mean, I'm sure that he can get ready. Will he is something that he would have to prove to us. We have to remember, he only has about 20 fights anyway, you know? He took off about a year or 2 years, I believe, before he jumped back on the scene when he fought Johnny Perez to a draw.
Yeah.
So he's being brought along pretty good for having such a long layoff, and he's been put in tough. But in my eyes, I don't see anything special. I see, you know, good boxing ability. He's also a brawler. I don't see too much of a punch. And I just see a lot of determination, which is my main reason for getting behind him. He just doesn't give up. He seems very relentless. I wish he had more power because it would add to his style of the, you know, the way that he fights. He throws a lot of punches. He moves a lot. He doesn't tire out. In the first Johnny Perez fight, he did get a little bit gassed, but he still picked it back up and finished big in the championship rounds. And those are all the things that sold me on him. And I'm just hoping he does have a really good performance on August 13th and possibly be able to prove to us that he is, in the category to be put in with Nonito Donaire, because at this point, from what I've seen,
did we lose him?
Uh-oh.
Hello? Oh,
wow. Hello?
Oh, you're back.
Oh, okay. At this point, from what I've seen, I don't think he's necessarily ready. I hope they don't rush that fight, even if he wins against at Beko, unless he wins big over at Beko and shows something that he hasn't shown. Because in the past, he's gotten hit a lot. To me, anyway, it looks like he's gotten hit a lot. Even in the Darchinian fight, he was taking some blows. He was just overwhelming Darchinian with, you know, the massive attack of all the punches and just the output. And that's basically how he's done the last, you know, two or three fights. It's been his output has basically shut down the other fighter. Not shut down to a point where the other fighter's not getting off, but just where it's basically tiresome. It's a physical battle for the other fighter. So I like that he comes very prepared. It seems like he takes his profession very seriously by being able to throw all those punches and not get gassed out. Is he ready for Donaire at this point? No, I haven't seen that.
No, I'll be honest with you. I haven't seen that either. I think you really hit some real key points. I think experience is one thing that he needs under his belt. Granted, he's fought, you know, a lot of name fighters yet, but I think there's got to be a consistency on that type of level. I mean, let's face it. Let's be honest. Whether you like him or hate him, Nonito Donaire is a true talent, and he's very skilled, and it's going to take a monumental effort to go in and actually be competitive and beat Nonito.
That's the point I wanted to make for the caller. He seems pretty knowledgeable, but, I mean, let's be honest. Nonito's a bad motherfucker. Who do you see at 118 right now that would beat him?
But let me tell you this, though. Let's not forget Nonito Donaire only has two names under his belt, which is Montiel and Darchinian. Other than that, he's been put in with some cream puffs. He's just the problem. It's not even a problem. What we all love in Donaire is that he gets in there with this limited opposition and he handles them appropriately. Where most fighters, when they get in, like you guys were speaking about Vanez is a good fighter, but we got to be honest. He's been in there with some, you know, B-class fighters, and he's come out victorious, but he's come out banged up. I mean, every fight I watch this guy get into, he's coming out with black eyes, you know, knots. He's cut. They're not taking out the competition in the fashion Nonito Donaire has taken them out. But Donaire's biggest fight was Montiel, you know, and then if you want to think back maybe, what, 4 years or 3 years? I may be wrong. It could have been 2 years. But the Darchinian fight, other than that, he's been put in with C-class opposition. Top Rank has been babying him and trying to milk every dollar out of him. So we never know. We never know because Abner Mars has been put in tough, and that's probably why he's looked the way he's looked. So you never really know how a fight between those two will look. He just, Donaire, like I said, he just handles C and B-class fighters extremely well. His style is so slick. He's not your average Filipino fighter. He's not your average fighter, period. He's very agile in that ring, and he doesn't waste punches. He's very accurate. So I don't know. I see it kind of hard for Abner. Now, again, it's like I said, Abner's been put in there tough, and Donaire hasn't been in with a fighter like Abner in the sense that comes forward and throws as many punches. But he is an excellent counter puncher, so I don't know. But
you know what, though?
I
think you're belittling Nonito's competition a little bit. I mean, he beat Tyson Marquez, who's a world champion now, who came and won a title against Luis Concepcion.
Yep.
He beat Sidorenko, who has beaten Moreno, who's a champion. And I think he was also a silver medalist in the Olympics. So I think Nonito, while he hasn't faced complete murderer's row, he has beat some good fighters.
And Raul Martinez is no slouch either.
I was about to say that right now. No, but I think it goes back also to the... I think it goes back also to what he was saying earlier. You know, it's just, when you look at Morris, you don't see a one specific thing. And when, you know, he's just a hard worker, he grinds out. And with a guy like Nonito, I mean, you can totally see his advantages, which is his speed and his power. And, you know, I think Ryan brings up a good point. A lot of his competition is always belittled a little bit, and mostly because those fights were never put on a big stage either, you know. But he has some good wins under there. And I think, you know, I don't can't see anybody near Nonito's division that can actually match the stuff that he can do. I mean, he has the size of it. He has the power of it.
Holy macaroni.
The two biggest wins that have been, you know, against big names, and he's got both of them out. So, you know, I think you got to give him a little bit of respect, but I'm with the caller. You know, I think Mara's will really, really have his hands full against Nonito. I don't know if they're going to rush that fight. It seems like they will, but hopefully they let him marinate just a little.
Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for calling in. We're going to put you back on hold so we can see if we can patch in Bonus. But thank you again, and if anybody else want to talk or want to chat with us, 347-215-7598. I don't know. I mean, getting back to the Mars thing real quick, you know, the guy brought up some good points, and I understand, you know, he essentially he's saying he doesn't really see anything special in Modest, but I tend to think it's much like, you know, kind of like what Alvarado has. A lot of stop starts. A lot of people don't realize that initially his first stop at Modest was because he had an appendicitis, and I think it burst, and he was sidelined for several months before he could really get on. So I think, you know, I think with time we're going to really assess whether or not Abner is that guy, that ultimate challenger to Donaire before he moves up to 122, before he moves up to 126, where guys like Gamboa, guys like Rigondeaux, guys even like Juanma or Salido are waiting for him. You know, I for one, I expect a dominant performance next week. I expect Abner's coming out party to actually now come to fruition, which it was supposed to on April 23rd. I do think August 13th we're going to see a stellar performance from the kid, and I think he's going to start to become, you know, that mention, that guy, that other side of Nonito's rivalry. And Lewis, you know, you've been around the scene. You've seen Abner grow from contender, from prospect to fringe contender to now a guy on the cusp of being maybe one of the elite. Do you see kind of what the caller said, you know, not too much, nothing special?
Yeah, and when I say I don't see anything special, it's like I can't pinpoint one specific thing that Abner is known for, and I think that's what it is. He's known for being relentless and being a hard worker and doing whatever it takes to win a fight, you know, and I think the caller brought up a good point. You know, in the Perez fight, you know, halfway through he was gassed, and I was like, oh, man, you know, this is going to be it. And, you know, he found a second win, and he found a way to grind out. You know, he didn't get the W that he wanted, but I think he showed that, you know, he has a lot of heart and determination. And, you know, I think, you know, I've seen Abner, you know, from, like you said, from when he started up to where he is at now. And, you know, they've been matching him up pretty hard, and I think he's going through some tests right now. And like you said, I think this fight is going to let us know if Abner is really ready for the next level. And I think, you know, taking on guys like Victor Chini and Yanni Perez, you know, and the thing with those fights, you know, it hasn't really been a definitive win for him. Even the Darchinian fight was a split decision.
Yep.
The Perez fight was a majority draw. So, you know, I think he needs that one solid, like Ryan said, a dominant win under his belt. And I think that'll really catapult to where we'll be talking about and finding, you know, the Donaires and other tough guys of the division or even the next division.
Well, time will tell. August 13th, live on Showtime, live at the Hard Rock Casino in Las Vegas. Abner Morris hopefully gets into his prime time against Joseph Ekpeko. But right now, we have the pleasure of joining us junior middleweight contender, Vanes Matarossian. Oh, let me see if she's patched in. Vanes, are you there?
What's up, Bernie? How are you, bro?
I'm good, man. Welcome to the show. This is Boxing Scene's official audio show, The Boxing Lab. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Luis Sandoval, and Ryan Burton. So tell me, man, how's it going? What's going on with you?
I'm good, man. I'm just home with my girl, bro. The baby's almost coming. It's almost due, so we're just here waiting patiently.
Oh, wow. This is your first, I assume?
Yeah, it's my first child, but it's a boy also.
Congratulations. Are you going to – well, here's the question right off. Are you going to put him in the ring?
I don't know, bro. It's whatever he wants to do, man, so we'll see.
Well,
the way,
you know,
the way the WBC is going, though.
Hey, he may end up being your mandatory or your eliminator.
Yeah, right.
Speaking of which, it's been a long road for you, Vaughn. It seems like forever that we see you calling out guys like Coco and anybody who you know is in the division. Is it frustrating for you to see guys get shot, guys get elevated past you, while you're sitting here waiting patiently for your shot? There's got to be a measure of frustration with you.
Yeah, well, it's frustration because, I mean, I got in the sport to fight the best fighters in the world, and, you know, I'm just calling out the best because I want to prove myself. And I don't want to fight guys like Saul Roman. I mean, Saul Roman was a great test for me, but I want to go to the next level and see what I can do. I mean, I know it might sound like I'm talking a lot of crap to people and this, this, that, but I'm doing whatever I can. I got the ranking. I got everything, and I don't know what else it's going to take for these guys to go in the ring with me.
You know, and that's kind of another thing I kind of wanted to bring up. You have called everybody out under the sun. You know, it's one of those things where you have to understand from a fan's perspective. They look at you and they say, well, this guy's calling out all these guys.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he fight them? And
yeah.
Give us your take on that side. Give us your side of that, because you have to hear it from you have to have heard it from a couple fans.
Yeah.
Hey, why are you calling all these big guys out?
Yeah.
Well, you know, from your perspective.
I mean,
go for it.
People think I'm talking crap or I'm being mean or I'm being an a-hole to everybody, but I'm not. I'm just trying to. I mean, boxing is where I make my living. You know, that's my bread and butter. So I'm doing everything I can to fight the best. I mean, these champions that they have, I don't respect them, because it's like, I feel like they bought the belts and instead of, you know, working their way up to getting it. I mean, one of the fighters who I respect, like Miguel Cotto, you know, those guys fought the best. And so even if they lose the fight, they're still going to be respected from the guys who fought. But guys like Canelo, man, he's fighting guys from 140, 140, 147. I just don't get why they let that happen.
Hey, Vanes, this is your PR guy, Ryan. I want to have a disclaimer for everybody out there. I do his press releases. But, of course, I've got some questions. We've been trying to help him get a big fight. What is your take on the WBO situation? I mean, you've been Sergey's in Zurich's mandatory for, what, almost a year now? And I see he's fighting the end of next month against, Andre Corseni, if I'm saying his name right?
Yeah.
And he's ranked below you. I mean, why aren't you getting that fight?
I can't even say his name. I mean, I don't know. it's been over a year and a half, and almost a year and a half. And I asked the WBC, and you know, I don't know what they're telling me, bro. I mean, but now I heard from some of my people that they're saying that you're fighting Denzeruk, and it's 90% sure. So I don't know whether that's true or not, or if they're just telling me that. I don't know what's going on. Everything's confused, and like they're telling me Angulo 1 minute, and then the next day it's the Denzeruk. So I'm just doing what I can in the gym and just get prepared and just get ready for a fight. But, yeah, Ryan, you know how it is, bro. We've been calling everybody, but it hasn't been, you know, nobody's stepping up. And a lot of the answers that I get from these champions are telling me that I'm too much of a risk.
Well, and we know that, you know, you were out of the ring after the Joe Green fight that took place on HBO. You were out of the ring about, what, 9 months? And you've had two fights since then. If you can't get the Zinzurek or Angulo fight, are you looking to get back in the ring, you know, at least one more time this year just to stay sharp and stay ready for one of the big fights?
I have to do what I have to do to win it and to always stay up there. I don't care as long as it's going to take. I'm just going to keep doing it and keep my name on the number one spot and see what else excuse they got. Because when we talked to Suleiman and all those people, and what I came back is, like, they said, we're going to give Saul Alvarez 1 year to defend with you. Wow. I was like, all right, so what do you want me to do for 1 year? Sit at home and wait for Saul to just, you know what I mean?
Make more
what is that supposed to mean? And then, you know, I talked to some people from Top Rank. They also told me that there's no way that Canelo will ever step in the ring with you and this, this, that. It's basically like Martinez and Chavez Jr. and me and Canelo. Basically, I mean, they just say that they're going to do this, but they're really not. I mean, after, you know, we fight Angulo and the winner of that fight, I'm sure there's going to be something else that comes up that they try to dodge us again. Me and Angulo will both destroy Canelo.
And I've talked about Angulo for a minute. We know he doesn't have a visa to get into the United States, but that doesn't mean he can't go to some other country. I mean, you said before you'd like to fight him, you know, in your home country of Armenia. If you could do it, you'd go to a neutral country. I mean, it seems you fought in Canada in March. That seems like, you know, if they put a card together, that maybe they can do it up there.
Well, I will go to Mexico and I will go to Angulo's backyard if the fight is made. I just want to fight. It doesn't matter where it is. I mean, Canada is a great place. I fought in Canada. I mean, we could even do it in Armenia. Victor Chin is fighting there too, but I don't know if that's too soon to fight on that card yet. But since there's going to be fights in Armenia now, we can do it in Armenia too. I mean, it doesn't matter where I fight. I'll go all over. I'm used to that. That's how I got my name Nightmare, when I was going into other people's backyard and I was beating them. So, I mean, we can continue on the pros. It doesn't matter where it is. I don't care about the politics, who's judging and who's not. I just want to fight because just like the Lara fight. It doesn't really matter what the judges say and what the, you know, what the WBC people say or the WB or anybody else. Is what the fans want. And, you know, Lara lost against Williams, but in everybody's eyes, he won, and that's where it matters.
This is Luis Sandoval. The question I have for you, I know you've been trying to get a big fight, you know, for a very long time. My question is, you know, I know you hear something from the promoter saying you're too big of a risk, but do you ever run into any of these fighters and ask them for a fight and ask them why they don't want to fight you?
You know, it's funny because I keep running into Sergio Martinez, man, and, like, every time we see each other, and I feel like he's not the one talking. Because every time I see him, I'm like, what's up? I try to say something. He goes, hey, mucho gustos. How are you? I'm like, good. How are you? I'm like, weren't we just talking shit like last week, man? What do you mean, how are you? Do something. And then like his manager was trying to push the fight, too. So I don't know, man. He's a really nice guy. So I don't get it. I've seen Angulo up front, too. We said hi to each other. It's all respect when we're in front. I guess everybody knows what it is, but I swear, if I ever come across Canelo, I'm going to slap him in the face, man.
Here's a quick question. I'll let you jump right back in, Luis. Are you going to go to the fight, the Canelo's fight at Staples, Vanes?
Yeah, I'm going to be there. I have to be there.
You have to. I think it's only necessary, to not only to scout, but maybe to even just say, you know what, I'm right here. Fight me.
Hey, you know what, Ryan? I think that you should come down here too, bro, and we can go to that together. And you know, I'll get some nice seats for us. We'll go to that fight, and Ernie too, bro. We'll go to that fight, and we'll go to the press conference with like, you know, billboards or like some paper in our hand, you know, talking crap. I don't know, man. I don't know what I have to do. But
you get storm the Golden Boy press conference.
I don't know if they'll even let me in, bro. I think Golden Boy probably has warrants for me right now.
Lewis, I'm sorry.
That brings me to my next question, and I have to ask it this way because I know what the answer would be. If you could pick to fight anybody besides Canelo right now, who would you pick, and why would you pick that person?
There's Austin Trout. There's Miguel Cotto. I mean, I don't really have one guy that I would want. I mean, Cotto is the main guy because I think that he's the champion at 154. Out of all the guys. I mean, Sergey Zenzeruk, I've sparred with them, and I beat him up really bad. They stopped the sparring in 3 rounds. I cut him pretty bad, too. And what sucks is that after I sparred with them, I'm the one who stopped the sparring because he got cut, and I stopped him like, hey, man, you're bleeding, you know? He didn't even see it yet. So, and after that, I told him, you know, let's fight and this, that. So now he was ducking from the fight. And when I brought up the sparring, he's telling me that, you know, no, it didn't happen. I was doing good and this, that. And so in my mind, I was like, man, I wish I just freaking just took his head off. So, you know, his fight got canceled. And then so then he won't have no room to talk. But I didn't do that because he had a fight coming up. I stopped the sparring. I said, dude, you're cut. You know, just go take care of your eye. Anybody else? I mean, Austin Trout, I beat him 3 times in the amateurs. We fought. I dropped him a couple of times. I mean, Cornelius Bundridge, I mean, wow. I mean, I don't think he should be champion. I mean, he's respected Corey Spinks. The only guy I respect is Miguel Cotto, and, you know, Miguel Cotto has a lot of balls to fight Mark Grito again, and I hope this time Mark Grito gets whatever he deserves because karma's a bitch, and I hope he gets what he deserves, man.
And then there are reports that Lara has been accepting your challenge and actually calling you out. What do you have to say about that? I mean, is that a fight you'd be interested in? What do you have to say to Lara?
You know this Lara thing, bro? Like, my people talk to me, and I'm like, yeah, make the fight. And then when they talk to Lara's people, it's like totally different answer, and it's not Lara talking. Just like when I was talking to Sergio, I didn't think I was talking to Sergio. I was talking to his people. And Lara's people, I'm down to challenge him, bro. I'm down to fight him. You know, I think he put on a good performance with Williams. But I'm not no Paul Williams, man. I'm Vanes Morales, and I think it'll be a great fight with me and Lara also. It's just, I don't know, they're talking, but as soon as I respond to them, nobody responds back.
And how frustrating is that, man? I mean, you know, you see guys like Canelo, you see guys like Canine Bundridge getting these belts. What, in your opinion, is the reason why you're not getting these fights? I mean, I know you're asking for them, but what do you think is the reason in your mind?
I mean, defeat, for them to lose. I mean, if they lose to me, who I'm just number one, and they're going to take 2 steps back, But if they lose to somebody like Cotto or somebody else, they're only going to take one step back. If not, even if they look good, they're going to take one step forward. So it's a bigger risk losing to me than it is to any other champion.
Well, all right, my man. It's Ryan again. But thanks for your time. Thanks for being part of the show. And I know we'll be in touch soon. And hopefully in the next week or two, we get some good news and you get one of those big fights.
Thank you, guys. I want to thank you guys for taking the time. I hope the show takes off, bro. It looks like you guys got some good people on it. So, I mean, I'll be listening, bro, and best of luck to you guys and the show.
Thanks, Vonis. I appreciate it. Hopefully this is the year that you finally get over the hump and we get to see you in a title shot, man.
Thanks a lot, guys. Wherever I fight, you guys got ringside seats on me. I promise that, okay?
Wow. We're going to take you up on this offer.
You got to, man. I always come through, so you'll see you guys soon.
All right, Vonis, take care.
Have a good evening. Take care of your lady.
Thanks, bro. Take care. Bye.
We were just on with Vonis Matarossian, junior middleweight contender, hopefully title shot hopeful. You know what? Say what you will, love him or hate him, the kid is very personable. He's always been one of those guys who's willing to talk, you know, to his fans, to his audience, to the media, and give an honest opinion for himself. And you know what? I'll say this. The guy is cocky. He's very sure of himself. But you know what? He makes a case. I mean, he's been at that level where guys like, you know, promoters like Top Rank and TV guys like HBO and Showtime really should put him in and see, okay, well, you know what? If this guy's really as good as he says he is, then you know what? Let's give him his shot. Let's give him his opportunity. Now, I know he didn't necessarily do himself a favor with the Joe Green fight, but I do think that Joe Green was just as much to blame as anything Vonis did, because I thought he came back with a stellar performance against Saul, coming off the deck in the first round and actually stopping Roman, which is, you know, no easy task.
And you know what else I would say about that is, you know, they said the Joe Green fight was boring, and honestly, I mean, he'll even tell you that wasn't the most exciting fight, but the Roman fight, I mean, that was a great fight. I'd heard that after that fight, HBO even said that would have been a great fight to open up the show to the Chavez card because, like you said, he got knocked down, he got headbutted and had a bad cut under his eye as well, and he came back and knocked the guy out. I mean, it was a pretty exciting fight.
Yeah, it was. It was a back-and-forth affair. It was Lewis, you and I covered that, right?
Yeah, we were there, man. We saw him get cut early on or hit. We were like, what's going on here? And then, I mean, it was a back-and-forth affair. Like, finish was the best. I think everybody in the house was happy that they got to see that fight.
Yeah, you know, it was one of those where we were kind of concerned about whether, you know, this fight would be worthy enough. And at the end of it, I think all of us sat there and looked and said, you know what, this would have been a good show to open up the HBO broadcast. Not that Mikey Garcia's fight or his performance wasn't worthy, but it would have been nice, even, you know, to show it as a triple header. It would have been a very nice and appropriate way to open up the broadcast.
To be fair to Mikey, I mean, he had that opponent change at the end, so it wasn't who he was supposed to fight anyways.
Yeah, that is very true. That was true. I do believe he was supposed to fight Fernando Beltran, who probably would have been a much better opponent for him. But, you know, that's, of course, you know, the catchphrase is boxing. Let's see. We have a couple minutes before we have our guest from last week. What time is Mercito coming on? Is he coming on at 7:30?
Yeah, he's supposed to be on at 7:30.
You know what? Let's take a call then. I see one for the 602 area code or 843. Let's try 602. Area code 602, you're on with the Boxing Lab. Are you there?
Yeah, what's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm great. And yourself?
I'm good. Listen, I just have a question. I'm a big boxing fan, too. And I mean, I am Mexican. I'm Mexican and everything. But I was listening to Vonis, and he's saying, like you said, he is a little cocky. And since I've been logging out to Boxing CMN for two years, I've seen he's always been calling out guys, and he can't get fights. But what I see is every time he tries to step up, he doesn't deliver. That's the way I see it, and I just want to know your take on it, because I know the Kasim Uma fight and the Joe Green fight, I mean, he doesn't impress me. I don't see nothing really impressive in him. I mean, I just want to know what's your take.
Well, I agree with you. What we've seen on TV is kind of a different thing than what we've been promised or we've been, you know, because I'll say this, and Lewis can attest to this. I've seen him in the gym. I've seen him spar a who's who, a cavalcade of great opponents, and he works them. I mean, there's a Chavez, I don't know if you YouTubed it, but if you YouTube Mark Rosas versus Chavez Jr. sparring session, you can clearly see that Vonis gets the better of him. So, I mean, you see a lot of potential there, and you see a lot of hope in there, but, you know, does it translate necessarily into a TV star? And I have to wonder about that. I do think the Uma fight was a questionable decision. It could have went either way. I do think the Joe Green fight was atrocious. I mean, even Vonis would admit that that fight wasn't probably the best. But, you know, I do think, though, also that he's at a time now where
it's either,
he's got to put up
or shut up.
You
know?
Exactly. Yeah. Good point. You know, and we'll see. I mean, do you see him being competitive with the likes of Canelo and Angulo?
You know, man, like, with the Angulo fight, it's going to be interesting because he's coming off that layoff. And
yeah.
But Angulo, man, he's just got that power where he lands you flush. And I mean, even that fight with Alcina or whatever his name was, I mean, he hurt him with the guy, like, he was grabbing him, right? And he hurt him with the overhand right, even when he was being held. I mean,
yep.
He had
Alcina out on his feet. I mean, he literally was out on his feet when the ref stopped it. So, I mean,
yeah.
Angulo's got that power that changes games. And
yeah, like, and I mean, it's going to be interesting because he can box him. I mean, we saw the Cintron fight. You know, he doesn't do good against the best boxers, but he's got that determination a Mexican has where he'll hunt you down, and if he lands flush, I mean, you might go down. And I don't really follow Vonis that much. I don't know if he can take a punch, but I mean, I don't know. It'll be interesting. But as far as Canelo, you see, I think he gets a lot of criticism, but he is really young. I mean, he's only 20 years old. And
yeah, but he also holds the title, and that's something that I don't let anybody hide behind the title. I don't know if you've been listening either earlier, but you know, I give Bayboot Shumanoff a hard time because he has a belt and he's not really fighting anybody. It's kind of the same thing with Canelo. I understand he's young, but you know what? It's Golden Boy's fault and for them giving him a title, giving him that title shot, because now everybody's gunning for him. And if they don't know if he's ready for that, then they shouldn't have given him a title shot. They should have just said, you know what? Let's just progress this kid. Let's make him a star. And then when the times come. You know, kind of like what Top Rank did with Chavez. I mean, they kept him off TV for a long time. And then when they felt he was ready for the title, then they gave it to him. And now Chavez is subject to everybody else out there because everybody's going to be gunning for him. And I understand go ahead.
Yeah. They're both cash cows. I mean, that's why they're using him. But you see, like, I think he's fundamentally sound. I mean, Canelo, I think he's got the tools to be good because, I mean, what I don't understand is a lot of people are saying he has a lot of power. I can't remember who was saying, but, I mean, I read articles and they say, like Roy Jones Jr. was saying, he packs a really good punch. I don't believe he packs a really, really good punch for his weight class, I mean, for 154, because he wasn't even hurting the 147 guys that much. But as far as being fundamentally sound, I think he's got the tools to be, I mean, give him a couple years and he's going to be really, really good. That's what I think. I mean, and to be honest, I even think he can give Vonis trouble. I mean, I have to check out those sparring sessions because I haven't seen them, but
yeah, give him
I don't know, man.
No, let me know what you think because
from
everybody who actually sat there and saw this sparring session because it was an open workout, they saw Vonis digging into Chavez's ass. I mean, something awful. And it kind of propelled whether Chavez was really, truly worthy of a title shot. And because Vonis really dug into him. And Vonis has been known to be really excellent in the gym sparring these guys, like Rashad Holloway. I think he sparred Manny a couple times, Amir. And he really works them. He really shows his true talent. Now, can he translate that into TV success? I think the jury's still out based on his couple performances on TV. And to answer your question real quick, he has been down a couple times. I'm pretty sure. Didn't Uma drop him, Ryan?
Yeah, he went down in the ninth round against Uma.
Okay.
the Roman fight. That's the only two times that I'm aware of that he went down, but he seemed to recover pretty well from both shots. But, I mean, Vonis' biggest problem right now is if you look at the guys at 154 that have the belts, you've got Chavez Jr., I mean, not Chavez Jr., Canelo, and you've got, say, Miguel Cotto, who he said he respects, who make a lot of money, and you fight Vonis, it's high risk, low reward. He almost needs there to be a vacant belt where he's ranked number one or number two, and he gets to fight for the title, get a win or two, to where his name is worth some more money,
well,
then get more fights.
Yeah. Well, to counter that, there's a WTA guy who has a title that's looking for a fight. He had a fight that fell through in Australia by the name of Austin Trout.
And if what Vonis has wanted to fight him, he's beat him three times in the amateurs, and he's trying to get that fight set up, but someone's got to – that a fight like that has to be on a network. Vonis would take that, because they've gone back and forth. You've seen it on Boxing Scene, I'm sure.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But, you know, I'll say this. Amateur ranks are one thing. Doesn't necessarily – I mean, dude, Martin Castillo beat Floyd Mayweather in the amateurs. I mean, would you venture to say that translates into the pro ranks? No, of course not. So I, for one, would love to see this fight because I think Austin is actually an elite type of fighter that's not getting the elite type of recognition. So I, for one, would like to see that fight between the two. And since Austin doesn't has a promoter that's not necessarily in a cold war with Vonis' promoter, this fight could get done. I for one, would like to see it. Caller, hey, have you ever seen Austin Trout fight?
No, I haven't, man.
You should actually take him, because he actually had a fight with Canelo's brother, Rigoberto Alvarez.
Oh,
and he
he's the one that beat him, right? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And Canelo, I remember saying he would go out and take vengeance on him. And once Trout went back to Mexico to beat David Lopez, things turned quiet with Canelo, and I'm not sure if he even wants that fight anymore. Hey, but you know what, 602, thank you for calling in, and we really appreciate you joining us. I appreciate you calling in and giving our show a boost.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate it. I think you guys got a good thing going on, and I'll be tuning in every other week, like always.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you, man. All right.
Have a good one.
Well, that was great. You know, for being scared to take calls because you never know what you get, I think both our callers, our three of our callers have been really excellent. You want to jump into news and notes really quick before we get Mercito on?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do that. First and foremost, I guess, you know, it's been out. Boxing Scene put it up. Steve Kim put it up. But to the disappointment of everybody, Kelly Pavlik dropped out of his fight this weekend against Daryl Cunningham. More importantly, it sounds like Pavlik's career is in turmoil. And I, for one, hope as a person, the guy gets his shit straight and gets his career, his life back in order. As far as his boxing career is concerned, I don't care to hear his name anymore. I mean, it's been so much drama since it went all downhill. And in order for me to hear his name again and say, okay, you know what, let's get behind this, let's get the man the treatment he needs or the help he needs, because I think it goes beyond just wanting money. I really do. I think he must know his self-worth. He must know it's not as high as it was when he was a champ, or his name was all over HBO. And for him to say that it was money, I got called bullshit. I really do. Ryan, what do you think?
I don't know. That just seems to me, it could, you know, the money was always the same to begin with. So why do you wait till the week of the fight?
I agree. That's one of those things where, you know, he already knew what the prices were. He already probably had preliminary discussions with the Boutte fight as to what he would get paid, or at least talk to his manager, Cameron Duncan. So now why all of a sudden, you know, do you put a city like Youngstown, which is hurting, on hold and basically say, you know what, I don't care what you guys do. I don't care if you bought your tickets. I'm not fighting for peanuts. And basically scrap an entire card where I'm sure his hometown people were looking forward to seeing him fight. So in that aspect, you know what, Kelly, I don't care to see you anymore. If you're not going to take this seriously, if you're going to sit there and haggle over money that you probably already knew already, you know what? You're better off sitting on the sidelines and letting fighters fight. You know, and you can just sit there and count the imaginary money that you have. It looks like our last guest is on, so we'll hold off news and notes. We've got some other discussions we want to do. But for right now, let's get on a lightweight contender, Philippine star, Mercito. Is this Mercito Hesta?
Yeah, this is me, Mercito, has to.
Finally, I mean, we have sat there and I got. We thought we got lost you in the wilderness, my friend.
I was out of town. And then my
you were way out of town. I mean, Vince was calling us, and he essentially just said, hey, you know what? Mercito's in an area that's kind of unreachable, so I'm not sure we're going to be able to get a hold of him. So, but I'm glad you're on now. You're on with, of course, Ernest, and then I'm joined by my host, my co-host, Louis Sandoval and Ryan Burton. What's going on? I heard you have a pretty big fight on September 17th. That's not part of the Star Power fight.
No, the fight is September 17th in Blue Water in Arizona. So just preparing for that fight.
Now, have they put you in with an opponent yet? Do we know the opponent for this show?
I'm not sure the opponent yet, but I think that fight is going to be is set already. So right now all I think is just focus on my training and start go back now and do next week. I'm going to do the strengthening, conditioning, and try to go back in shape again.
Good. That's good to hear. You're at starting your training again. Vince has told us that you're back in the strength and conditioning aspect of this. Is it hard to keep the momentum going, knowing that you just went through a hard camp and now it's back into the grind, or is it rather easy and it's kind of just second nature to you?
Yeah, I'm kind of used to it already, but all I need to do is to improve more and train more harder, because I'm almost getting there, and you know it's going up and the opponent is gonna be tougher, and all I need to do is focus on my training and try to improve, and my sparring partner, I'm going 3 weeks before the fight. I go to Wild Card, and I hear that Linares and Benavidez, they were there, and it's good sparring in there, and I think this fight I'm gonna have a good training camp.
And Mercito, talk about being an up-and-coming Filipino fighter following the footsteps of Manny Pacquiao and then Nonito Donaire. How does it feel, looking at Manny, who's the big, Filipino idol? Then you have Donaire, who's had, titles in, I think, three weight divisions now. I'm sure you look up to those guys, but do you feel any pressure trying to follow in their footsteps?
Yeah, I respect them. I kind of follow them, because they're big names in the Philippines, and people comparing me, like them, Manny, but I'm making my own name, and I hope that someday I'm gonna be a world champion too, and it feels good, it feels motivated too, that people the fan that thinks that I'm gonna be there. I make sure that I'm going to be there and show to them that they're not having a mistake, that they're right, that I'm going to be that person, that boxer. So,
and we got to bring this up. We've had Brandon Rios on the show. We've seen reports where you said you wanted to fight him. And Brandon was on this radio show at first saying that it's really not a big fight for him, but hey, if you want it, hit to quote unquote, he said he'll tear you a new asshole. When you hear comments like that, I mean, I'm sure you laugh at it, but
I'm just laughing that he says that, just laughing, because I know he talk, but he's a champion, he's a world champion, and he beat Antillion, but I'm different, I'm not Antillion, I'm not Acosta, but if he wants, try me, and we can fight, let's see who really, but for me, he just talk, he knows the talk, but if that happened, I'll be ready for that, and I'm willing to fight the guy if he wants to fight. And like I said, I don't care whoever, the best in my way. That's my job, and I'll make sure to win the fight. And that's all I've been dreaming, to fight for a big in the championship fight.
What? And as Ernie mentioned, you have a fight coming up on September 17th. Do you think that after that fight, you'd be ready for someone like Brandon Rios or another champion? Or do you think you need to get, you know, more of a mid-level contender? Because I've also heard your name mentioned with fighting the IBF champion, maybe Miguel Vasquez.
Yeah.
Do you think you're ready for those fights yet, or do you think you need another fight before them?
Well, after that fight, you know, I'll show... No, I'll make sure to show the best, and I'm gonna show to them I'm ready for the championship fight. And for me, I think, you know, after that fight, I'll be ready. I think, you know, I'm just waiting for big one, you know, and I'm ready anytime.
Hey, Mercito, this is Luis Sandoval. The question I have for you is, I know you've been calling out Brandon Rios, but is there anybody else that you would want to fight at the high, at 140? I know Brandon's 135. Is there anybody at 140 that you would want to fight that interests you?
In 140, 135.
Yeah, would you be interested in moving to 140 if there was a big fight? There, it seems like there's a lot of big names and a lot of younger guys at 140 that might give you a chance. Would you be willing to look into that?
Well, right now I'm kind of stick for 135 right now. Maybe next year, if I feel like I want to move up, because right now my target is just to win for 135 pounds a world championship, and after that I'll think about, you know, if maybe I'll move to 140 or stay in 135. So right now I'm just kind of stick to 135 and look for the best in 135.
Okay. And then, you know, people say that, and you know, that you might not be ready for a big fight. What do you think separates you, and what makes you ready to take on the big names in your division?
Well, I've been doing this for a long time. And I think I'm ready. You know, I'm calling for big names, but you know, the only big name that I fought is Mesa, and
good win,
and,
by the way.
Yeah, in the vibe, and then I've been waiting for my shot, because I've been boxing for, like, I started when I was 15, and now I'm 23. Now I haven't have in the fight experience, but in sparring, I've been sparring for this good champion guy, and I did good. I know it's just a sparring, but I cannot tell myself that I'm ready for this, and I'm ready for the championship. And if they give it to me, I'll be ready for that. I'm gonna train hard for that one.
Mercito, do you feel the pressure? The Filipino fans, they're very, very passionate about their fighters, whether it be Nonito, Manny, yourself, even guys like, you know, like Boom Boom Bautista, Jerry Penalosa. They're really passionate about the fighters that fight for their country. Do you feel a little bit of pressure knowing that you're next in the line of Filipino fighters that the fans and essentially a country is getting behind?
Yeah, kind of pressure, but you know, I'm just gonna do my own thing. But you know, sometimes it motivates me that I represent my country, and it makes me more train hard, especially when I think to my family, you know, not just my country and my family. It gives me motivation to train hard and to do my thing, not just because of myself, but because I represent my country. And I think that's why I need to do that. And
so instead of pressure, it's more motivation for you.
Yeah, it's more motivation for me to represent my country.
Well, you've done a fine job, Mercito, representing your country. You've had stellar performance after stellar performance. And I, for one, look forward to your career blossoming. I do think you have what it takes to be a champ. When you do win on September 17th, we'd love to have you back on. September 17th, you're fighting on Top Rank Live at the Blue Water Casino in Arizona. We want to thank Mercito Hesta for coming on. Please join us again when you get a chance.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate this and for the support, too. And you guys, this is, you know, big name. I mean, helps me, too, to spread and people listening to this. So I really appreciate this. And, yeah, I'll go back here after the September fight for the interview and
Just be in an area where we can call you.
yeah, of course. Well, I forgot my charger that time, so I went off and then I was just go with my girlfriend.
it's quite all right, Mercito. I'm glad we had you on this week, and take care and train hard so we can see you have another stellar performance on the 17th.
All right, thank you guys. I appreciate all right. it.
Thank you, champ.
Have a good night. Okay.
Nice young kid. I think that's the theme of this. I guess this show is nice young kids show.
True.
good kid. You know what? Let's before the show ends, let's jump back right back into the news and notes. I do want to thank Mercito for being on. I do think he's going to be something special down the road, but. I don't know if anybody saw this. I know HBO debuted it last week, but we saw the face-off with the eerie music and Kellerman's bug eyes for overseeing both Floyd Mayweather and Victor Ortiz. And in one word, I got to say, corny. Just corny. I mean, I understand Floyd's going to do his thing. Floyd's not going to be interested. Floyd's going to look at Max's Prada shoes and stuff. But I don't know, man. This seems, if it's not rehearsed, it seemed really, really like they tried too damn hard to make this interesting.
I don't know. It's funny because I have the exact same, the exact opposite opinion, and I don't know. Maybe
because you're riding Floyd's nuts.
It could be, but you know, the one thing I did like, and the first thing I thought when I finished watching it, and I thought, you know what, that's the reason why Floyd does the numbers that he does. Because, you know, maybe to us, the hardcore boxing fans, we see that as flash and something that's scripted. But to the casual fan, that's stuff that gets them to watch the fight. And I think, you know, whether you think it's real or not, you know, I think Floyd, you know, was being Floyd. He was being the same confident guy he's always been. I think Vic tried to come in there with his game face on. And you know what? Floyd just mentally took him out. I mean, I think towards the end, I think Vic was actually looking and getting a kick out of the stuff that Floyd was saying, just like, you know, us fans. So, you know, I enjoyed it. It was a 12-minute segment. I enjoyed it.
I mean, come on. I mean, not to shit on my boy Vic, but I'm going to do that too, bro. Oh, I'm going to do that too. And it's like, think of something, dude. Say something other than,
yeah,
I'm going to do that too. Oh, I'm going to get in your ass too.
I think at that point he knew it was over. I mean, I think he was just watching Floyd and he was trying to play catch up. And well, I think, you know, I think Vic had a better face-off with Max Kellerman than he did with Floyd.
Very true. Ryan, let me ask you this question real quick. Do you think the way that Victor Ortiz kind of got manhandled in this face-off is something we'll see in the ring?
You know, I think this type of fight is going to come down to, I think Victor is going to do okay for a couple rounds, but Floyd is just the master of making adjustments. I mean, we saw it in the Mosley fight, and I think at this point, I think Victor's probably got as much pop and as close to the speed as Mosley, so I could see him possibly stunning Floyd early, but then what did we see after that? I mean, you know, Shane was done after that. After two rounds, he wasn't in the fight anymore. Now Victor's a lot younger. He shouldn't gas out, but I just think it's the just the changes and the way that he can change the style that he fights. I mean, Floyd against Shane, he was just sitting on his punches. He was going forward. It wasn't like the typical Mayweather fight that we see. So I'm curious to see the type of adjustments that Floyd will make inside the ring. But I think Victor, like, give him two or three rounds, he'll land a couple of good shots. I mean, even Ricky Hatton landed one or two good shots. It's not like nobody hits him. It's just he makes the adjustment, and it's like, you know, he shuts him out after that. And that's kind of how I see this fight going. I think it'll be, like I said, good for about three rounds, and it's going to be all Floyd.
I see the same thing. I think, you know, people are and I mean, I think picking Floyd is the right thing, but I think Vic's going to do a lot better than people are thinking. And I like you, Ryan, I think, you know, Floyd could definitely get hurt or stunned at some point. You know, they said in the press conference, I know it's just for, you know, to make the fight seem better, but, you know, Vic has dropped, I think, almost everybody but one fighter he's been in the ring with.
I could see him drop Floyd even. I don't think he'll knock him out, but I could see him drop him early.
Yeah, me too. And especially, you know, we know Floyd has, you know, problems with southpaws. And, you know, Vic's a strong, big guy. I mean, I think Floyd eventually, like you said, is going to take over the fight. But I think the fight will be very interesting early on. And, you know, if Floyd's going to stand in the pocket, I mean, I think that's probably one of the reasons he might get caught.
Also in Star Power news, we just saw heard today that Eric Morales is not fighting Jorge Barrios. Which
Thank God.
Yeah, which would have been a laughable title shot concerning Barrios. I don't think he's ever fought at 140, and he's not ranked anywhere near the WBC's rankings at 140. The new name being proposed, and from what I assume is done, is Lucas Matisse. He of the two title challenges, one to Zab Judah, one to Devin Alexander, where a lot of fans out there thought he did enough to pull the nods on both. I made the mistake of discounting Morales' chances against Maidana in April, and I ended up paying for it because I got shit talked to me a lot by a lot of people who I thought Maidana was going to wipe the floor with Morales.
You hate Morales.
You know what? We'll save that for another conversation. But getting back to the actual fight, is this too much? I mean, Lucas can crack, and there's more skill in Lucas than there is with Maidana.
That's what I was going to say. He's a better version of Maidana.
Yeah, so now, does Father Time catch up to Eric?
You know, I'm done picking against Eric. You know, I'm a big I'm a big Morales fan, and I picked Maidana to beat him, and he gave me a great, great surprise. But, you know, I agree. I think he's a better version of Maidana. And, you know, while I'm not really going to make a pick right now, I just think, you know, Morales is a certified badass for even taking this fight. And I'm glad Matisse is getting this shot, too. I mean, I know we're talking about WBC sanctioning this fight. But in a way, I'm kind of glad that Matisse is going to get rewarded with a title shot and a big fight.
Yeah, I agree. I think they found Golden Boy did an excellent job at getting the proper fighter for a title shot like this. And if Morales is going to win a title at 140, it's got to be someone of worthiness. And I think Matisse is definitely worthy of a title shot. I think he's not embarrassed himself in efforts against Judah and Devin. So I look forward to this, and I actually think this makes Star Power's overall pay-per-view stellar. I think it's a solid card, probably one of the more solid cards we've seen in years, with a nice opening matchup between Josecito Lopez versus Jesse Vargas, two guys looking to, you know, catapult themselves into true contender status. Josecito enjoyed that previously, but
I'm looking forward to that fight.
Yeah,
really.
I think that ends up being the fight of the night, unless, you know, we can see Gomez pulling some magic out of his hat and giving Canelo a run. I do think this is probably on paper the most evenly matched fight of the night. It's truly a pick 'em fight. With the added Morales Matisse fight proposed, yeah, does this push Star Power to 2 million buys? I still think it's short.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it definitely helps, but with Canelo and Morales on there, having both of the, you're drawing the same fan base. So I think definitely 1.5. I think it'll end up between like 1.5 to 1.7 maybe.
Yeah, you know, I also, you know, I want to commend Golden Boy for doing the split site. I mean, you know, and to top it off, they're giving us, like, Ernie, you just made the rundown of the card. I mean, that's a really good card.
Yeah.
And for being on September, you know, 17th Mexican Independence Day, you know, putting two big Mexicans' name on there, and then you have a big fight with Floyd. I mean, you know, if they don't get to the 2 million, I don't think they will, but they'll get pretty close. I think, you know, 1.7 sounds about right. But I just think they're doing a great job.
If you were to split this card up into four individual fights, all four of those you can make a case for being headlining fights in whatever level. Like the Vargas-Lopez fight would be an awesome showbox headliner. Morales versus Matisse would be an awesome boxing after dark. Canelo versus Gomez could be, you know, a nice little world championship boxing. So I mean, this card, you know, is top to bottom solid. And for Golden Boy to make a real proactive effort to try something different and try the split side, logistically, I've heard, you know, a couple people from Golden Boy, I talk to them regularly, say this is, you know, it's going to be really difficult to do. You know, having there's things like fight week. How do you handle a fight week? How do you handle a weigh-in? How do you handle a final press conference? You know, but overall, they're really excited about this, and they really think this is innovative.
Ramiro and Monica are going to have their hands full.
Yes, they are. Moving on, Tim Bradley, is he on? Is he off? It's kind of ridiculous to see him going through the ringer of what the WBC put in front of him. First he was stripped, then he wasn't, and now finally, I guess Suleiman put out a letter saying essentially that he was in recess. And essentially, I don't get it. To me, the man did nothing wrong. Yeah, we understand he's in contract turmoil. And yeah, we understand he hasn't fought since the Devin fight. But is that enough for the WBC to essentially, one, strip him of the title, and two, make an effort to try to hand Eric Morales the belt that Tim Bradley, you know, is stripped of?
Well, first off, Ernie, do you think that, or Lewis, both you guys, you know, they announced the fight was going to be against Barrios, and then now we hear the reason is he couldn't get a visa. Is that the real reason, or is the WBC caving in to a lot of the pressure and bad press they were getting for basically, like you said, handing Morales a fight, and now they're getting him a credible opponent?
I think it might be true. I mean, I think they tried to make this fight last year in December or something, and he had visa issues then. But I think for their benefit, whatever the reason was, I think they lucked out getting him off the card and putting Matisse in there and having Morales. I think, you know, I think it still smells foul of the WBC, what they're doing. You know, I feel bad for Tim. Like Ernie said, you know, his promotional or his decision is not to take the con fight aside. I mean, it's not right to do that to him.
Part of the problem that I was made aware of was that the WBC belt actually – a mandatory hadn't been fought since last August when, you know, Devin Alexander had the belt when he fought Andre Kotelnik. So then he does a unification bout with Tim Bradley, and now we're coming up on 11 months. That was a unification fight, you know, against Bradley, but it wasn't actually defended against the mandatory. And from what I'm hearing, that is the reasoning why they decided to make this move, plus the fact that Bradley doesn't look like he's going to be getting back in the ring anytime soon.
Yeah, it definitely does it. I mean, he's going to be – I mean, who knows how long he's going to be in court right now. He's dealing with promotional problems that now he's getting his title put on hold. I mean, it's a bad situation for him right now. I really hope that all this at the end pays off because I know he's trying to put himself in a position to fight a Manny Pacquiao. But, you know, there's no guarantees that he's going to get that. So, for his sake, I hope there's a pot of gold at the end of that rainbow.
October 1st, we've got in addition to the stellar matchup that is Sergio Martinez versus Darren Barker, not to shit on Darren Barker because I saw the flack that Steve Kim got, but he's a 26-1 underdog. Anyways, Rafael Marquez has agreed to fight, I hope I don't mess this gentleman's name, Toshiaki Nishioka. People will remember him for starching Johnny Gonzalez in Mexico. They're going to fight October 1st in Las Vegas. I do believe a belt is on the line. I think that is Nishioka's WBA belt, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe you're correct.
Yeah.
If it wasn't so close to my birthday, I think I would head out for this. I think this is a very dangerous fight for Rafa, who's, I mean, I think admittedly he's on his last legs a little bit. I think he's, you know, he's in the extended prime of his career. And this is a highly dangerous fight. We saw what Nishioka did with Gonzalez, and if Rafa's not careful, he can wind up in the same boat. He can definitely see this being a bad night for Marquez. And I don't know. What is your guys' take on this? I mean, to be honest with you, I hope this is on TV somewhere in the U.S. I know it's going to be streamed back to Japan, but I hope it lands somewhere here.
Well, I was actually by some of the guys from Tekken Promotions that are going to be putting this on. Top Rank is helping them out, and as of a couple of weeks ago, it was not going to be on US TV,
Boo.
But, well, the first question I had was, you know, these are good fighters, but Mandalay or the Grand Garden at MGM, really? And they said, no, it's going to be in a ballroom. And I guess it's some type of Japanese holiday, and there's supposed to be a lot of Japanese people in Las Vegas for this weekend. And I think it's the 20th anniversary of, I think it's the WOW or WOW WOW television network. And that's what the premise is, and they wanted to have the fight in Vegas. So the next question obviously was, well, what time is this fight going to be? Like in Japanese time, or, you know, is it going to be at 4 o'clock in the morning? And they said, no, they were going to do it on U.S. time, and it's going to be on, you know, early in Japan.
Interesting.
And Chocolatito might end up on that card.
Oh, nice.
That actually makes it very interesting. I might have to make a trek out to Las Vegas for that then. News that we heard also this week, Bernard Hopkins, his titles are his defense against Chad Dawson is not going to land in Canada like we had hoped, and with Pascal under the undercard, not going to land in Philly, New York City. It's not even going to land in Connecticut where Chad Dawson resides. It is going to land in Los Angeles.
A perfect place.
Yeah.
I know you guys are going.
it's funny, when I heard it announced, weren't you just a little bit happy because you knew you were able to watch it, but at the same time you were thinking, this makes no sense?
No, it makes no sense. I mean, yeah, of course I want to cover fights that make sense. And plus, from what I understand, the undercard is going to be pretty good with possible Danny Garcia versus Kendall Holt and Jorge Linares being on this card. But from a boxing needs to be in places that make sense aspect, it doesn't make any sense. Hopkins, his last fight here, I think, was Eastman. It did okay sell-wise, but I think the selling point was 20 title defenses, so that's why they brought people out. I'm not sure that this does the same. And in this economy and with guys who don't attract casual fans to their shows, I wonder if this tanks out here. I got to scratch my head about this decision. I mean, we've been clamoring to see Hopkins return to Philly to see have a hometown fight. This would have been a nice matchup because the Eastern Seaboard could have flocked to this fight. But you know what? We're in our position. We cover this. The bigger guys who make the big decisions, they place this in, so they must know what they're doing. And hopefully this turns out to be okay, but I have my doubts about that. Wrapping up the news and notes, Juan Mausolito is possibly moving to 2012 with maybe Juanma taking a tune-up. I think it's a good move for Juanma. I honestly see, just looking at the condition he was in watching Salido, I kind of question whether or not he can go into the Salido rematch immediately and not get the same result.
Yeah, I think it'll be good for him. I think, you know, the one thing Juanma shouldn't do is chase a fight or a fighter for too long. You know, he needs to keep busy, keep himself ready, and hopefully that rematch happens sometime next year. Hopefully, you know, he gets something in place where, he could get a confirmation or something, because, you know, he might be chasing that fight for a while. I think Salido, you know, he's doing the smart thing. You know, he's trying to, milk the thing right now. I mean, he has a belt. I think he feels he has a lot more power than he will if he didn't have the belt. And I think he feels, you know, he could dictate stuff right now. He could either go for a Juanma fight, he could go for a Gonzalez fight. And, you know, while I would want to see a Juanma fight, I mean, I think he's doing the best thing for him, and I really can't blame him.
Yeah, definitely. Salido's not a guy that's made, you know, $1 million in his career. So, you know, if he gets a couple of fights, and like you said, why wait around if you're Juanma? There's other good fighters in featherweight division. Fight one or two more, and then come back and get a big fight first quarter 2012 in the rematch.
Exactly.
Hopefully we see Juanma, you know, kind of right the ship a little bit, you know, in the meantime, and when the rematch happens, he's fully prepared and there's no excuses. We've got a couple seconds before the show wraps up. As always, I want to thank my co-hosts, Louis Sandoval and Ryan Burton. Excellent show today. I want to thank our guests. Yes, I know 60 seconds, dear. Abner Mares, junior middleweight contender, Vanes Matarosyan. He's going to call out until he gets someone. I can feel it. And last week's no-show, Mr. Wilderness himself, Mercito Hesta. You guys got anything else to add before we get off the air?
Hey, you want to give him a little teaser for next week?
Oh, yeah, next week. We got a pretty good show. We're going to have both Marcos Maidana and Robert the Ghost Guerrero on the show. to discuss their August 27th fight. So you guys got to tune into the Boxing Lab, Boxing Scene's official audio show. I'm Ernest Gabillon, and for Lewis and Ryan, we thank you for joining us, and we hope you have a very excellent night.
Keep on trucking.
Yeah.
Good night, guys.
Take care, everybody. Oh, man.